I had a little experience, you know. Doug asked me here about a week ago if I would like to chair the breakfast meeting, and I said, it'll be a privilege, Doug. Who are the speakers? He says, well, we have a Father Mel that is going to speak. And I said to Doug, I said, well, is he a drunk? And Doug looks at me sort of weird, and he says, I don't know. Well, I thought, God, he's on a committee. He ought to know something. But anyhow, I poked around, and I found someone else, and I said to this other person, well, is this Father Mel, you know, is he? Oh, yes. You see, oh, well, that made me feel better. And then I went to someone else, and I said, this priest, is he a drunk? Is he an alcoholic? I don't know. So this is the situation that I came in here till I met this worthy gentleman now, and I found out what he is. He'll tell you what he is. But that was more or less the way I got here. But I'm not going to take up any more time, ladies and gentlemen. I asked Father Mel how long he could talk. He said 3 hours. And that took a little tension off me because I knew that we only had 1 hour to fill in. But without any further ado, I'm going to ask you to welcome Father Mel, and I'm sure he'll have a fine message for us. Ladies and gentlemen, Father Mel C.
Well, you must all know by now I'm Father Mel. And I'm just an old good priest. I said that in a meeting one night, and I offended someone. I said, I know me, and God knows me, but you don't. Now, a little louder here. Somebody said this. Now I see. We'll just kick this a little closer together. There we go. If we get this place adjusted here and I get a voice, we'll be all set. Thank you very much.
Don't worry about this.
Okay. There it is. This reminds me of a story of a young priest that got up to preach the first time. And he got up there and he got to a place in the sermon and he said, I'll go into my father's house. And his mind went blank. So, you know, he learned in preaching school, so to speak, that if your mind goes blank, you say it over again. He said, I'll go into my father's house. Still blank. Said a third time, I'll go into my father's house. No go. So he got down off the pulpit and he was going across the altar and an old priest looked at him and he said, say, young fellow, whenever you get in, say hello to the old man for me, will you? So this morning I've been asked to speak on the 12 steps. We're going to say hello to the old man according to the principles and customs of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's one of the finest spiritual programs, I believe, on the face of the earth. It took me several years to get into it myself, to understand its structure, and to come to live by many of these principles according to my own needs and according to the way I understand God myself. So we get into this first step. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Just take that word, admitted. It's a very hard thing to do because we talk about two things. Maybe three or four things, actually. But admitted here really means surrender. And surrender brings about humility, humility, which is the opposite to pride. You see, until pride begins to go, then we cannot admit that we are actually powerless over anything. For example, if I'm talking to people who are not alcoholics, and somebody tells me I got a problem with anger, Well, if you have a problem with anger, and you go into that first step, then you're powerless over your anger. What happens when you get angry? You lose control of your life. It becomes unmanageable. You say and do things you're sorry for after. So AA works for any man, woman, or child ever born to the face of the earth. You people are lucky that you are alcoholics because it means you've delved into your life. And to some degree, depending on you, you have found a degree of serenity dependent on how you practice these 12 steps. And so, in this first step then, That surrender is a fantastic step in a man's life, because he realizes for the first time that he's not the only person who walks the face of this earth. He's not the only person with faults and failings. He finds he's another one of mankind. And what a fantastic revelation that is. I know I was 33 when that happened to me, when I found out I was just another pebble on the human beach of life. I was no better and I was no worse than any other human being. I could be me. And that's what the first step lets a person start to do. To admit that they are not perfect. To admit that they need help. And to be able to surrender in the sense that they know their life is powerless, and through that powerlessness, it becomes unmanageable. Then when we come to step two, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now that sanity refers back to the unmanageability of life. Anyone whose life is unmanageable in any way, shape, or form is to some degree insane. Because manageability is part of human reason, part of common sense. And so that's all that sanity really means. It doesn't mean somebody ready for an insane asylum by any means. Every human being on the face of the earth must say, in all due respect to themselves and everyone else, if they know themselves and if they are honest, that their life is unmanageable, and to some degree, they are insane. Otherwise, they're liars to themselves. They don't know their own life. I've never met a perfect man yet. And then when we can discover this, that our life is unmanageable, that we are a little bit insane, well, then we can surrender. And then we can start to look around, how do we get out of this mess? How do we bring back this manageability? How do we do that? That's step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to that manageable state of life. What a happy thought. That we can once again be sane. That we can once again have manageability. And there begins the first little inklings of true serenity. The first little inklings of peace of heart. The first little inklings of goodbye pride and come humility. I'm just an ordinary human being. My, what a great thing to be. Just me. I don't have to put on the dog. I don't have to put on a show. I don't have to care what other people think. In fact, I can say at this point, if people love me tremendous, and if they hate my guts, tremendous too, because that's their problem, that's not mine. See, I got enough problems of my own without worrying about anybody else's problems. But you see, serenity and peace of heart is so important to me that I can't let any man upset me. Never. Never. This peace of heart is too precious to lose. And if I become upset or I become angry because somebody doesn't like me, then I lose my peace of heart. On the other hand, because somebody likes me and pats me on the back and I get all excited, I'm a real good guy, I lose my serenity too. So you see, you got to just be yourself. See, I'm me and I love me. Now, in here starts the first inklings of what love is. And I believe that love has nothing to do with sex whatsoever. If you love sex, that's a lot different from loving people or loving persons. It really is. Because a person, you see, is someone like yourself. Whether they're male or female doesn't make any difference. They're another human being with you in the walk of life. And that's really, really something when it comes to, you know, being ourselves. And so we look around for this power. And as somebody said to me not so long, well, you know, this light bulb up here, you know, that's my higher power. I said, too bad, I just turned off the switch. Kind of a weak higher power, you know. Somebody else looks up at the mountain over there and they say, hey, that's my higher power. Look at that big thing. Somebody puts a stick of dynamite under it, goodbye mountain. So when you're looking around for a higher power, look for someone. Someone that no stick of dynamite, no light switch, nothing can change. That is the higher power you can depend on. Because I wouldn't want to have a higher power that's here today and gone tomorrow. And I think that higher power that we all look for and seek, as we understand him, when we begin to find him, we find that we start to form a personal relationship with a person. Now, I won't go into any further than that, because if I do, we're getting into religion, and I don't want to get that far. This is where prayer comes in. We've all heard of prayer. Now, what is prayer? Prayer is simply talking to this higher power as you understand him here and now. It doesn't matter what you think about him. It doesn't matter what words you use, because he knows and understands you. And I've known people who in a dead stupor of drunk have prayed and have had those prayers answered many, many times. So always remember, if you're the mother and father of children, don't you know them? Don't you understand them? You should. They are your own flesh and blood. Think about then this higher power. How does he understand you? It doesn't matter what you think about him or what you know about him, but the fact is, if you can say, hey, help me out, he will. I'll guarantee it, absolutely. I was talking to a man the other day. He said, I don't believe in God. I said, I dare you to pray this prayer for a week. He wouldn't take me up on it. No way, because he doesn't want to believe in a higher power. He is the higher power. See, when we don't believe in a higher power, then we are it. And when we are it, that is pride blowing up to its maximum, and any man who lives his life like that will return to the bottle. Why do people after 15, 20 years sometimes go back to the bottle? Pride. I'll bet you dollars to donut. And the thing is, they did not follow the 12 steps. That's really true. And again here in this first and second step, something that is so important. Do we want help or not? I had a young girl come to me the other day. I couldn't tell this story if she was here now, but she's not here, so I can tell it. And I talked to her for a few minutes. She came to see me about another problem. I take retarded children out to a prison out at Matsqui, and the men out there work with them. And she came to see me about this particular program. And as we talked along, I said to her, just hold it right there. I said, are you an alcoholic? Well, now, yeah, well, you know, all this stammer. I said, just yes or no. Are you an alcoholic? Well. Well, I said, if you can't answer it, I will. I said, you are one. I can tell because you speak in resentment. You speak in anger. You speak in hatred. You speak in fear. And I said, you're an alcoholic. I'll bet you dollars to donuts. She is. So I said, now the next thing is, do you want help? Will you do what I tell you to do? If you don't, there's a liquor store down the street. Bye-bye. I was taught that principle by people who know AA well. You see, you can never help someone who does not want to be helped. Don't ever try it. On your 12-step work, never try to help somebody who doesn't want you, who doesn't want your help. It's like a man drowning in the river. You can throw him the life preserver, you can throw him the rope, but if he will not hang on, sorry, but you have to drown. That sounds very harsh and cruel, but if you try to swim in the river when you can't, you will be the one that drowns along with that person. I know it, I've gone through the experience myself. Again, your own serenity has to come first. AA is a selfish program. Absolutely. Totally selfish. And like I said before, this is in step 1 and 2 where love begins. AA is not a selfish program in the sense of doing everything just for you, but in this sense, that whatever you do that is totally good for you is good for everyone around you, even for your higher power. But anything you do in life that is not totally good for you is not good for the person next to you. It's a very hard principle to figure out, but it's true, and it's part of AA, really. It really is, because AA is an absolute selfish program. And when I begin to really love myself, when I can really accept myself as I am, with all my faults and failings, then I can accept my neighbor with all his or her faults or failings. Totally holus bolus. And when I can do that, that's where I start to find God, believe me. Because I believe love works in three steps. Love me, love my neighbor, and love my higher power. And so from there we go into the third step. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Here is the absolute essence of AA. Here is the absolute beginning of true serenity. And I found so many people in AA who have never taken that third step. What does that mean? If we make a decision within our own mind, just like we first made the decision in step one or two, one and two, I should say, that we are powerless over alcohol, that there is a higher power. These are two decisions too. But then this third decision, they made this decision to turn our will and our lives. Now what happens when you give away your free will and you give away your entire life? What's left for you? Nothing. But it is in the giving that you receive. Because when you give your will over to the care of God as you understand Him, He gives you back His will. And when you give your life over to the care of God as you understand Him, He gives you back His life in its fullness. And that is what makes you begin to grow. A person who takes step three has no right to ever worry in his or her life again. Nor do they have a right to follow out their own will because they've given it to God. So then you are not worried about what I want to do. I'm worried about what God wants me to do. And I'm not worried about what I want to do with my life, but what God wants me to do with it and how He wants me to live it. I now no longer have a life, but I have a fuller life than most, because the life of God and His will is what gives me happiness and what anchors me into serenity that nothing, no one can ever break. Because He is all-powerful. And so that step three is a very, very hard step to make. I'll give you an example. In my own life, I went into the priesthood in 1954, and I never really made that step until 1969. How long it took me. So don't think you make that step in AA very quickly. You don't. And another thing about these steps, you can go over them many times in life. The first time through, you know, it's a kind of a jump, hit and miss affair. And the second time through, you get in a little deeper. And the third time through, you get in deeper. I'm sure I could talk on these steps at least 15 times over and come up with something new each time. At least, maybe more than that. Because that's how deep they go. They contain the absolute whole and totality of living in all its size, shapes, and forms. It leaves out nothing. And so when we turn our will and life then over to God, that is where serenity starts to come in. Not abstinence. I know so many in AA who are only abstinent. They don't drink, so automatically they have a better life. But they certainly don't have anything like serenity. Because this is where serenity comes from. Because when you turn your life and your will over to the care of God as you understand Him, you will start to meet people you never expected. You will end up in places you never knew, and you will be doing things with people, and things will be coming out through your mouth, and you'll wonder why you said them to people. Because God will be using you to bring others toward Him and toward that serenity and that peace. It's a wonderful, wonderful program, this. But that step three is the hinge. That's the hinge between success and failure. It's the hinge between sorrow and happiness, and it is the hinge between abstinence and sobriety. It really is. It's not an easy step to accomplish. But always remember, it's only in the giving that we ever receive back. And when you give to your higher power your little will, he gives you back his own, which is a million times more powerful, a million times more strong. And when he gives you back his life in exchange for you, the whole world begins to open up, because you have then the eyes to see and the ears to hear so many things that you never saw before. I can remember the first time I got a set of glasses. I couldn't believe how much I was missing in this world. Fantastic. It's like if you have a colorblind man and you say, "Hey, George, look at that beautiful rainbow up there." "George, look, what? That dull old streak in the sky?" Right? So too then, you see, if you don't have the eyes to see and the ears to hear when that higher power of yours is answering the prayers that you prayed, then you think your prayers aren't answered. It's like the guy that was lost out in the bush, eh? And he fired off all his shells, three in a row, nobody answered. He kept one bullet in the gun because he's going to shoot himself in the head. All of a sudden, you know, he told everybody, he said, "I was praying and praying and praying." And so somebody jumped up and said, "Hey, were your prayers answered?" He says, "Heck no. If it wouldn't have been for that Indian guide coming through the forest, I'd still be there." Now, in other words, when you pray to God, eh, to come to an understanding of God, if you don't have the ears to hear and the eyes to see, you miss out when he answers your prayers. You pray for a Cadillac, eh? And God gives you good health, you miss out the answer to your prayer. You pray for sobriety and God maybe let you get drunk, you miss the answer to your prayer. Because when God answers those prayers, he's going to make you strong timber. Because, you know, God is a very selfish type of character, you know. He really is. He never gives nothing without wanting some return. He's like the bank, you know, little interest on the side. So that if God gives you peace of heart, he's going to want you to use it. God never gives a person gifts for themselves to keep inside here. It's only for other people. That's why you got the 12th step in AA. And that, of course, is what accumulates your happiness and your joy and your love, your patience, your kindness, your generosity, your humility, and above all, love. To be able to love any man, woman, or child, regardless of their circumstances, race, color, creed, anything. Because they're like me, equal to me. I'm no better than them, I'm no worse than them, than anyone. Fantastic. Takes all the struggle out of life. It even kills the rat race in which we live. Step four then, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Hey boy, that's a rough one. I remember when I did that myself, I was 19 years old, you know, and I went into the priesthood and I said, "Hey, boy, how well do you know yourself?" You know, that was a rough one, I'll tell you. But you see, until we know ourselves, eh? In other words, you know, if you're going to give your life and your will over to God, what are you giving them? I catch so many young girls on this, you know. You say to a young girl who's going to get married, and you say, "Do you love yourself?" "Oh, no, I don't love myself." "You love this guy over here you're going to marry?" "Oh, I really love him." So you're giving him all this junk you don't love, yourself. Self-knowledge is very, very important. It really, really is, you know. And to make this inventory, there are several of these guide to the fourth step. That's for the alcoholic. And there's a guide to the fourth step for the spouse of the alcoholic. Fantastic pamphlet. Tell you the truth, I'd much sooner work with an alcoholic any day of the week than a spouse, because the spouse usually ends up much sicker than the alcoholic. Much sicker. The alcoholic stops drinking and he starts to move onward, eh? His resentment and his fear and all this goes. But the spouse, it didn't happen to yet. She's still resenting this guy. Not only that, he's not, you know, if it happens to be the man that's the alcoholic, he's not dependent on her anymore. He's cut away from her anchoring strings and she gets pretty lonesome. Boy, I tell you, it's a real struggle. I would sooner work with an alcoholic any day than a spouse of one. That's why you find the guide to the fourth step for the spouse is much thicker than the guide for the alcoholic. So we gotta just go into this four-step guide. Now, one of the most important things, if you're ever going to do a four-step, write it down. I've had so many people come and they call me up and say, Father, you hear my fifth step? I say, you got the fourth one written? Oh, no, I know it all by memory. Sorry, I don't hear four steps like that. Just like that, I don't hear four steps unless it's written down. And a four-step, you know, if you're 40 years old, you got to have at least 40 pages, if not 80, hey? Otherwise, you're cheating somebody. Because, boy, in 40 years, you know, that's a long history. And so you have to write it down, and you keep it until after you made your fifth step. I can still remember one of the first fifth steps I ever heard in my life, you know. And the guy had, I think it was about 56 pages, all handwritten. He'd rewritten them 5 times. He was in an institution down in the States. And so he comes in, you know, and he starts off, and he makes, you know, he says about 4 sentences. He's reading this thing off. I said, hold her right there, Joe, hold her there. I said, did you ever think of such and such? Oh, he said, that's on page 20. I said, well, let's bring it right up here into this paragraph. That's why you're running into troubles with your wife. You never connected these two things together in your life. That's what the fifth step is for, by the way. You know, we'll get into that in just a second. So anyway, if we just go through this guide real quick, because we've only got a few minutes here, and I could spend 2 hours on this guide. Oh, this is a dilly. I wish I would have had one of these when I was going through the seminary. It would have helped me out a lot. Another thing, when you start to go through one of these, I just might mention this, I work in a prison, the Matsku Institution. And any person out there that I think's at least interested in their life and wants to make progress, I hand them this four step. I explain to them how to do it. One guy come back to me the other day and he said, Father, you're a miserable so-and-so. I said, why? Well, he said, I started doing that four step. I said, so? Well, he said, I woke up 3 times last night. The old subconscious going to work. Boy, don't let you rest, I'll tell you. Well, I said, what did you do? Oh, he said, I got these things on my mind. So I said, what did you do? I got up, he said, just like you told me, wrote them down. I said, what happened? He said, I went to sleep like that. Right? Because they're written down. You don't have to worry about them anymore. You're not going to forget them anymore. They're written there. And so the subconscious plays a tremendous role in this four step. So if you ever start making it, carry a little pad and paper around in your pocket. Because when the ideas come, stop your car even, write them down. And then your mind is free to look for some more. Because the degree you do this four step, the perfection you do it to, is going to decide a little bit of what kind of serenity you're ever going to have in life. Because you never have anything bothering you if you ever do it right. Never will. So we look into little things, like selfishness. How does that affect your life? Remember we just said AA is a selfish program, and the first thing we start criticizing the whole guy here is for selfishness. Well, you got to figure all that out, you know. Alibis, eh? Till the alibi system breaks, you never stop drinking. Absolute impossibility. That's an excuse, a reason for every drink I take. Talking to one guy one day, I said, well, do you like to drink? Oh, Father, he said, when it's hot out, I like to drink. When it's cold out, I like to drink. When I get into a fight with a wife, I like to drink. When she's happy, I like to drink. I said, I like to drink. So then, you know, dishonest thinking, pride, resentment, intolerance, impatience, eh? We just have to, it explains all these in this pamphlet. And then we get into what they call the 7 cardinal sins, the big one, pride, covetousness, avarice, lust, envy, anger, gluttony, all these kind of things. Then we come to the 10 commandments, you know. That's really hard, you know, for somebody that doesn't believe in God, eh? Fact is, whether you believe in them or not, you see, you just look through these 10 commandments, you know. Just for example, the first commandment, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt not have strange gods before me. Let's just pull it out of scripture now and put it in AA. Okay? Is God omnipotent to me, or are my gods money, fame, position? Do I seek him first, or do I come first? Do I seek his will, or do I seek my own? What comes first in your life? Any man who can't answer that like that certainly doesn't know himself. If your house was burning down and you had 5 minutes to get out and you could take 3 things with you, what would you take? What's important? Yourself. That's the first guy you take out, boy. If that's not important, I don't know what is, eh? Just to give you an idea. Then it says here, time out, eh? And this is a very important thing in the fourth step, eh? You've all seen a man going across a high guide wire, maybe in a picture or something. He's got a big stick in his hands. And he's got 10 feet out this side and 10 feet out that side. And that is his balance. And so he's walking across and he can balance that. So in the road of life, we have the good points in our life on the right and the bad points in our life on the left. And when we learn to balance the good and bad in our life, we can walk straight down the road of life. Because for every good point you have in your life, you have a bad one over here. Maybe you haven't found it yet, but it's there. And for every bad point you've had over here, you have a good one over here. Absolute balance to the road of life. And so they start talking here then about the virtues, the attitudes, and the responsibilities of life. So it talks about, first of all, the divine virtues, eh? Which is, in step two, we start talking about the virtue of faith, eh? And then the virtue of hope, that there is a better time ahead. And then, of course, the virtue of charity, which is above all, love. And then we get into what they call the little virtues, eh? The building material. How to put your life back together again. Little things like courtesy, cheerfulness, order, loyalty, use of time, punctuality, sincerity, caution in speech, and so on down the line. Out in the prison where I work, I go down the hallway many times and I'm always laughing, and having fun. Somebody says to me, quite often, how come you're always happy? I say, why be sad? It's just as easy to be happy as it is to be sad. Just as easy. Just as easy to practice virtue as it is to practice vice. Why to go to work? Oh, I hate the whole work, How you doing, boys? What's the difference? It's just you, how you want to be. You can make yourself what you want to be, especially with the help of that higher power. You really can. You can have the character and the temperament that you want. If you want to be angry, you can. If you want to be happy, you can. You can turn it off and on just like a TV set. Get in front of a mirror sometime, make yourself angry, make yourself smile, get the use of your emotions. Okay? Very easy to do if you work at it. And so as we go along, then we come to the attitudes, eh? Oh, pardon me. It talks about the plan, of living just for today. Most important plan. Don't live for tomorrow. Don't live yesterday. You just live for today. 24 hours today. If I started thinking about right now all the problems that I got on my shoulders, I couldn't talk to you. I really couldn't, because I have that many problems on my shoulders right now. But I can't even remember one of them hardly right now. Because that's for tomorrow. I haven't got here yet. I'm going on holidays all next week anyway, so it'll have to be for next week. Eh? Got to learn to live like that. You can't let anything interfere with your serenity today. Nothing. Nothing at all. You really can't, because that is so precious to me. So precious to have peace of heart, to have love, and to have me. That's really important. Because if I haven't got that, I've got nothing. I've got chaos. I've got unmanageability and insanity. No halfway. You either have one or you have the other. And so it talks then about the attitudes, eh? Attitudes toward God, then. This God, this higher power we're talking about. Attitudes towards myself, to my family, to my work, and to my friends. And then, of course, the responsibilities of life to God, to myself, to my family, to my work, and to AA. And similarly, the pamphlet for the spouse is very similar to that one. It's just a little more extended. Because believe me, the spouse of an alcoholic is always sicker than the alcoholic. And many times, so are the children. They really, really are. And they have a harder time than the alcoholic. Much, much harder. Keep that in mind. Then we come to this great fifth step here. A lot of people really shy away from this, We got to notice how this fifth step is worded. The wording here is absolutely important. Where it says, we admitted or surrendered to God what we got in this fourth step. Okay? This is me, dear Lord. This is me. You know what comes back? I still love you. And if you're good enough for God, if you're good enough for that higher power as you understand him, then why are you not good enough for every other human being on the face of this earth? Whether they like you or don't, makes no difference. Because especially when you admit it to yourself, this is me. And if I'm good enough for that guy upstairs, well, then maybe I'm good enough for me. Maybe I'm good enough for me. Maybe I can live with myself. And then, of course, to make those two admissions is easy, because it's still all in here. The hard part is this, admitted to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. That's a very difficult thing, but the beauty about it is, if we admit it to another human being who understands and knows what he or she is doing, that's most important.
then we make certain that we are not lying to ourselves. It's very easy to do. Very easy to do, because that's a very, very hard step to make, the fourth and the fifth. And so then, after we have... after we have conquered this fourth and fifth step, of course, then this is where we start to go at this higher power again, eh? We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, you know. Do I want God to remove my anger? Do I want God to remove those beautiful resentments? Do I want God to remove all those beautiful alibis I got? Do I really want not to drink? Do I want God to take away all those nice friends I got that I used to sit in the bar day and night with? Do I want God to restore my wife and family? Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Now that's a big decision to make. Because it says entirely ready to have God remove all, not a couple of them, all these defects of character. That's very hard to pray for, because you have to change your life at this point. Your life is going to change. You're either going to make it or break it about here. And that's very difficult. I know I struggled with that for many years myself. I didn't know if I wanted to change my old ways. I was very happy with them, you know. Like, you know, I used to like to hunt and fish and all these kind of things. But when you're out hunting and fishing and having a good time, you're not really helping anybody, not even yourself. You're being absolutely, totally selfish, unless you need that rest. And so, God has now removed all my joy in hunting and fishing. And the only place I really find true happiness is with my fellow man. Because that's where love is. I never caught a fish that loved me yet. I never shot a deer that said thank you. But I've heard an awful number of fifth steps and seen a new man rise out of a chair. A man with hope, a man with courage, a man with trust, a man with faith, and a man who now can love. And boy, the satisfaction that comes back to me from that is worth more than all the fishing trips in North America put together. It really is, because that's love. So many times when I'm finished fifth step work, I can look the man or woman straight in the eye and say, I don't know if I helped you, but thank you for what you've given to me. Most marvelous exchange. The AA program is an exchange in love, and love is always a two-way street. If on your 12-step work you don't receive that back, you're wasting your time. Because 12-step work is for you. When you go out in a 12-step call, you don't go out there for Joe Blow, you go out there for you. And if you don't go out there for you, you're wasting your time. Do you remember what it says, you know, in the big book? I can't quote it. But it says when you go out on 12-step work, you go out there to tell your story. The way it is for you. And you don't worry about whether that person believes it or what they think of you for saying it. But if you've really taken step three, you know that your higher power is working through you to them. For that higher power knows their heart, their weakness, and the words that will connect with them. And so let him use you. Don't try to be the big shot on 12 step, Carl, because you're just doing it for you, under the direction of him. Wonderful way. You never have to worry about going out in 12 step calls, what you're going to say, or anything like that. Even like this talk here this morning. To me, I don't know if you're getting anything out of it, but I'm getting lots. It's the way it always has to be, because life is a selfish program. So I could always say, you see, thank you for listening to me, because I've had my fill. I don't know whether you have or not. Know what I mean? Then we get down to step 7, eh? Humbly asked him to remove all our shortcomings. Now, when we get down to that point, eh, shortcomings means all the little nitty-gritty things in life. Very hard thing to remove, eh? God, we're going to start being... You know, we're going to start getting perfect around here. We don't want that to happen to us. We don't want to be a goody-goody. But that's not what that means. It means a greater degree of serenity. So we don't have these little things bugging us. Little things that bug us take away a little bit of serenity. And that's too precious to lose. And I see now that it's just about 10 to 12, and I think maybe I should stop speaking because I was asked to stop at 10 to 12. Well, it's up to you. I don't mind going on. Okay, well, we'll go to step 8 then, eh? Step 7 is like step 6, except it's a little nitty-gritty, see? See, when you have, goodness, eh? Goodness and evil, eh? Just to give you an idea of what it is, goodness comprises everything, eh? Like you got an apple, eh? You got an apple. If you got a rotten spot in the apple, that's the evil in the apple, isn't it? You have to dig it out, eh? So evil is a lack of good. And so if you have shortcomings in your life, it's that much goodness, that much serenity that you miss. That's kind of the icing on the cake to take away the shortcomings of life. It's really beautiful. It really is. It's fantastic. Step 8 then, made a list of all the persons that we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Very, very difficult. Don't try to go overboard on that. If you can't find a person, that you owe some guy $100, you don't know where he is in the world, give it to a charity, just as good. But if you can find a person, give back to him. Don't tell him you stole it, just give back to him. I remember one day in the church, I went in to the poor box, and a big fridge, had just broken down in a certain place that we were using it, and went in the poor box, there were $385, I guess somebody owed somebody something, and they dropped in the poor box, so we got a new refrigerator, it was fantastic. Just like last Friday, I opened up a check, and it looked like $50, and I said, thank God, boy, $50, that's really good, And I got home that night, and I looked at it again, it was $5,000 to help inmates of prisons and retarded children. I got to tell you a little bit about that after we get down 12 steps. Everybody has their story to tell in life. So I made a list of all these persons then and became willing to make amends, say, to the best we can. And then, step 9, of course, made direct amends to all such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Now, you see, that's where it comes. If you're going to injure somebody, your own family, your own good name, somebody else's good name, then give it to some charity. But give it. Don't keep it. Even if that means, digging way, way, way down in the pocket so far that you wonder if there's a dollar bill left. Because it's in the giving that you receive. And if you are generous in that part of AA, God, your higher power, will be generous with you in your financial makeup of your life. He really will. You can never give God nothing, Just to get in the gospel, just for a little wee bit, okay? Says in there, if you give a glass of water in my name, you will receive your reward. What about when you pay back the $5,000 that you stole? Who? Think of the reward you get, $10,000, $20,000, $100,000. You laugh at that, but I'll tell you one little story, eh? I was out on the Indian reserves one time working, and I met a lady who had a great number of children. And she had nothing to cook on. Nothing. But she had electricity in the house, So I ran to a store, I got her a brand new electric frying pan, I brought it back and give it to her. And I no sooner did that, and the idea come in my mind, I said, okay, dear Lord, what do you give me back? A few months later, $2,000. Always like that. It always comes back. God will never fail you. But if you don't have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, then you don't take it from God. You just say, it's luck. Not luck at all, really. So then, we come down and it says, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, to promptly admit it. Very, very important. That's got to be done every day. Let it go for a week. It's too long. Every night before you go to bed, but when you get up in the morning, you say, how was it, kid? How'd I do? And if there's something that's wrong in your life, fix it. Now, I remember a man when I was age 12, and he was always happy. And I said to him, Sammy, how come you're always smiling? How come you're always happy? He said to me, well, Mel, he said, if I got something bothering me, I sit down, I think about it, I find out what it is, and then I get up and I do something about it, and then it no longer bothers me. Very simple philosophy, part of AA. Really is. So, that personal inventory, and to promptly admit that we're wrong, not in a begrudging way. Fantastic thing. I'm wrong all the time. You know, if I do two things right in the day, well, that makes up for something of the 80 things I did wrong. Really hard for me to admit I'm wrong. Really is. I just hate to say anybody, it's my fault. I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry. You can say that so easy, you know. Try saying it's my fault. You know, but it's got to be from the heart. Otherwise, don't say it. You're a hypocrite. You do. It's got to be. I've heard so many people say to people, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. It means nothing. I've heard people say to me, you know, while you're working with so-and-so, give him a pat on the back. I said, no way. Why not? Because I'll give them that pat in the back when I can mean it. But they're not doing a good job right now. So what's the use? I can't lie to them. I'm hurting myself. Right? Pretty true. So think about that 10th step. It's really, really important. And then step 11, very important. Thought through prayer and meditation. You know, it's got two things there, prayer and meditation. Prayer, you know, talking to God. Meditation, waiting for Him to talk. Waiting for Him to talk. Take out a little time and be silent every day. Let Him talk. It's like one man that I know, and he gets up every morning, and as soon as he gets out of bed, he takes the little 24-hour a day book. First thing. And he described how he hid away from all the kids and all the noise in the house, and he reads this little book. And he said, in 20 minutes, I'm smiling. Because you can be if you want to. Because in that little 24-hour a day book, there's something for you and me and for everyone in the world. It's life. It's living, and we're all doing that, we hope. So thought through prayer then and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, to give us the eyes to see and the ears to hear, and to cut our pride so that we will have humility and remember that it's God as we understand Him working through us, nothing to do with us at all. As I speak to you here today, if anyone is helped, it's not me at all. I'm merely like a water pipe spouting off. That's all. It's Him that's doing it through me. The day that I get to thinking it's me, boy, you wouldn't be able to listen to me at all. Praying only for knowledge of His will, going back to step 3. Only for knowledge of His will. Lord, what do you want me to do? What am I going to do today? Quite often I get up in the morning and say, well, Lord, what have you got planned for me today? I never plan a day, never. He plans them all for me. Always does. He doesn't make mistakes, I do. So if I start planning my day, I'm really in rough, rough trouble, you know. So praying for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. No more unmanageability, no more insanity. The power to carry it out. Fantastic. And of course the power He gives you, to carry it out is in simple language, love. Love is the power to carry it out, and love only comes from God. Human love is not enough for the human heart. As St. Augustine wrote about 1600 years ago, you know, he said, our hearts were made for you, O Lord, and they will not rest until they rest in you. See, God is selfish too. And he only, whenever he creates anything, it's for him, not for us, for him. He's sharing his goodness with us. Because that's anybody that's good, shares. Goodness always goes out from itself. Selfishness always comes into itself. That's the difference between the two. So God is selfish, So anytime He gives us something, it's for His greater honor and glory. I gotta watch that. I might get into religion here, and that'd be bad. So we pray for knowledge then to carry out His will, Not our will, but to carry out His will. And of course, like I say, that power is love that He gives us. It's just like if you have a car that runs on gasoline, you can put all the water in the tank or oil in the tank that you want to, and that motor won't run. It was made to run on gasoline. And the human heart is made to run on love. God's love. That higher power's love. And if you try to run it in anything else, you'll run your life into a wreck. It just won't operate. It'll operate a little bit, like a car running, 8-cylinder car running on 2 pistons. Kind of rough. Step 12 then, having had a spiritual awakening. I like that phraseology. Sometimes they say a spiritual experience as well. In other words, having our spirit wakened up within us. Having had that. As a result of these steps, that's what messes up, a tremendous number of 12-step calls. Because people go out on 12-step calls who've never had that awakening yet. And so as a result, they mess up somebody else's life as well as their own. I've seen it happen so often. People that would be in AA today making out well, but the guy who went out in the 12-step call didn't do what it says in the big book. He tried to be the big shot. I'm going to fix your life up, mister. Can't do that. You can't run anybody else's life. All you can do is tell your story, and then he either takes it or leaves it. Never want to pressurize anyone, because that is their life and their will. And so we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice all these principles in all our affairs. So carry the message to other alcoholics. That's probably the easiest part, because that's just telling your own story. But to practice all these principles in all our affairs means that you may have to quit your present job because you are cheating people. I've met many men who have come to AA and had to quit their job, eh? I don't want to mention any companies or any particular types of jobs, but I've known many men who have had to quit their job and go to another job. Because if you're going to have AA, that has to come first and foremost in your life. If you're going to have peace of heart, if you're going to have serenity, you have to sacrifice all else. Everything else has to come secondarily to your own peace of heart and your own serenity. That is love of yourself. And so they had to quit their jobs and go into a much less paying job. But I was over at someone's home not so long ago, and he said, there's the refrigerator, a gift. There's the car out there, another gift. I don't only have one home now, I have two homes. Got so much money coming in, I don't know what to do with it. That's the way God rewards. And to find that, you have to be able to trust in that higher power as you believe in Him. And always remember that your belief can be improved. Your knowledge of anything in this world, even yourself, can be improved. And so pray that God will show you what His will really is. And that He will show you what He wants you to do with your life. And I will guarantee you serenity, happiness, and absolute love. Thank you very much.